You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, this is Phil Rogers for MLB.com Extras, NL Central Edition. And we're talking about a division that looks as exciting as any in baseball. The only team in August in the Central with a positive run differential was the Pirates, who are in third place, but sneaking up on the Cardinals and the Brewers at the top. It's going to be a great September to see how these teams shake out and how many of them can make it to the playoffs. Happy to be joined, as always, by Jen Langosch, Cardinals beat writer for MLB.com. And looking at a Cardinals team that, wow, it must be simple. You get Yadi Molina back on the roster, and boom, like that, you're back in first place. That's sort of the way it happened. First time all year, the Cardinals moved into first place shortly after they got Yadi Molina back. Jen, is it that simple?
Well, you know, you look at what happened this weekend, and it's Matt Holliday taking this team on his back, and you know, 3 days, 12 RBIs. Without him, there's a potential of this team getting swept in a four-game series by the Cubs. So, I mean, certainly having Yadi back gives this team a boost. I think we've already seen that in the way he's been able to work with his pitchers. You know, watching him help Carlos Martinez maneuver out of a troublesome inning on Monday stands out. Seeing him over the weekend work with Shelby Miller when his delivery started to get out of whack. You know, those are things that Yadi picks up on almost as a second pitching coach for this team. So, yeah, I mean, having him back is a boost. Matt Holliday getting hot has certainly helped this team. You know, and it's pretty interesting that after 5 months of us talking about how the Cardinals really have yet to click as a unit, here we are on September 2nd, and the Cardinals are in first place all by themselves. So this is a team that feels it's getting healthy at the right time, that feels that some of its stars are kind of performing at the right time, and it's a good place to be heading into the final 4 weeks of the season.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, it seems like we spent the year talking about the half-empty part of the glass with the Cardinals, and then you look up and, still in position to make a run at a 90-win season and very well positioned to win a playoff spot in a very balanced Central where, I kind of think they have to feel like they're fortunate. In August, the Cardinals go 16-13. But the Brew Crew, 13-14, so they're actually still, treading water, I think you'd say, the Cardinals, and able to gain some ground. Just the fact that they've been there before, done it, now they even have Peter Cosma back. So, they're all poised for their October excitement. How confident are they that, just that their pedigree, is showing up and will continue to show up?
Yeah, I think that's certainly a factor here. I mean, I think first off, this is a team that realizes it has not played up to potential this year. And the fact that the Brewers didn't take advantage in creating any separation, the Pirates have had their troubles, the Reds have sunk to where, they're fighting to stay out of last place. So through it all, for the Cardinals to be positioned where they are, despite really some mediocre playing throughout much of the summer, is a positive. And yes, you look at what this team has done down the stretch in recent years. You look back just a couple years to 2011, and that team wasn't positioned nearly as well as this club, and it makes a strong run in September. Last year, about this time, the Cardinals were fighting the Reds and the Pirates off in the Central. They finished strong, that team, in September. So, the fact that there are many players on this club who have been there before, again, I think the health thing is a big key for this team. You get Yadi Molina back, and they're on the verge of getting Michael Wacha back. When you talk about other teams bringing up players in September to fortify a roster, nobody else is bringing up the likes of a Yadi Molina and a Michael Wacha. And for a team that's been able to kind of, as you mentioned, tread water, those two guys can be difference makers down the stretch. And you look particularly at this week ahead, the Cardinals are in the middle of a three-game series against the Pirates, and then they head up to Milwaukee for four games. I think by the end of this week, we'll have a better idea of where the Cardinals are going to be positioned while heading into about the final 20 games of the year.
Yeah, and what about a guy that I know every day is probably front and center around the clubhouse and for people around the team, has had a big presence going back to the Tony La Russa era, but seldom really seems to get noticed, I think, nationally. Daniel Descalso, who we just saw play four different positions in the infield in four games. I mean, really showing his value. then when you see this guy, I mean, he almost probably feels like he's been there since Red Shandienst or something, even though it's only been since 2010. But how important is he to Mike Matheny's bench and just kind of to the continuity that they've kind of had going from La Russa to Matheny?
Yeah, I mean, Daniel was a part of a group of young players that all ascended together about four or five years ago. I mean, you look at Dan Descalzo, John Jay was part of that group. You know, it's been a tough year for Daniel. You look at his last couple years here, and he's found a fit as a versatile utility infielder, but he was used a lot more in more recent years than this year and really struggled to find kind of an opening, you know, with the way that Johnny Peralta has played it short, with Colton Wong coming up and playing second and Mark Ellis backing him up. There really hasn't been a lot of opportunity for Danny this year through about the first 4 months of the season. Come August, however, especially with Ellis having gone on the DL fairly recently and Wong having, you know, needing some days off and having some trouble, Danny's gotten the starts, and he's performed. And I think it's probably no coincidence that the more playing time that he's gotten over the past 5 weeks, the better his bat has been. But you look at him when he spot starts, plays very well, gives, as you mentioned, a guy who can play anywhere in the infield, just got done making a rotation all the way around the infield in a three-day period, and has also proven to be a pretty good bat off the bench for this team. And again, I think by getting a few more starts, he's been able to be better prepared to come off the bench. But when you look at where this team went the last 3 years, Danny Descalzo was a big part of that team in 2011, 2012, and 2013. And some of the hits that he had in September, some of the production that he gave this club in October, they don't get where they are without him. So he has been somewhat of a forgotten guy, but I think he could be an important guy down the stretch. And we talk about players who have been there before, this winning mentality. He fits that to a T, and his ability to spell some other players' rest who might be fatiguing at this point, I think it's a pretty big deal for this team.
Another, you know, mentioned Peter Cosma earlier, and he talked about a forgotten man. I mean, nobody wants to go back to the minor leagues, but with Johnny Peralta signed to take his position, it seemed like it gave Cosma time to go to AAA and just steadily work on his hitting, which, you know, obviously great fielder who just couldn't quite hit enough over a 162-game season to establish his value. How important do you think that has been? And even though nobody ever wants to go back to the minor leagues, could that work out to be a good long-term for Peter Cosma to have had that time this year?
Yeah, I think so. And he, you know, to some degree admitted as much upon coming back a couple days ago, just that by going back to AAA, certainly not where he wanted to be, especially after being a starting shortstop last year on a team that goes to the World Series. He goes back to AAA, but he plays every day. I mean, had he been on this Major League roster this year, he would have been in a spot very similar to Daniel Descalzo, where the bats would have been sparingly coming, and it would have been tough, I think, for Pete to get his swing right. And when you look at where he was ending last year and coming to this year, you know, his goal for this year was to get that swing consistent again, to take some of the work that he had done late in the season last year with John Mabry and really implement it. And by getting those consistent at-bats in AAA, he comes back here feeling pretty good about where he is offensively. Now, you know, there's no disguise about it. He is a defensive player first, and the Cardinals didn't bring him back thinking that there would be a prolific bat there. But certainly, he was able to have a pretty successful offensive season in AAA. And when you look at what he can offer this team in September, he too can play across the infield. He will give the Cardinals another right-handed bat off the bench. And again, hopefully those at-bats that he got in Memphis can translate it to a little more success here in St. Louis.
And you touched on Michael Wacha, made his first rehab start, only threw 34 pitches in there and, you know, kind of running out of schedule to do rehab starts and in a situation where maybe you consider simulated games or other ways to get guys work. How can he get ready in time to contribute in September in some kind of a fashion?
Yeah, he can. It's just, I think it's going to be a matter of how the Cardinals want to do it. You know, they have a couple options right now. You can bring him back and start him up in Milwaukee over the weekend. If you do that, however, he's probably going to be limited to about 50, 60 pitches, so it'll be more of a piggyback situation. Where the Cardinals do have that flexibility, having expanded rosters and having some long relievers up there, that is a possibility. I think the more likely route, you know, the Cardinals were fortunate in that their AAA team advanced to the Pacific Coast League playoffs they play this week. If Walker wants to go and pitch in game three, which would be Friday, that would be his turn on turn, he could throw those 50 to 60 pitches in AAA, and then 5 days later, I would imagine he'd be back in St. Louis. So, and I think we're going to see whatever route the Cardinals go, there is going to still be a building up of pitch count, a building up of arm strength going on through this month. But if you look at kind of where the trajectory would take him by the end of the season, by the end of the September, Michael should be able to carry a full load. And then if you can get him, A, with the strength to go 90 to 100 pitches, and B, with the command back and his pitch crispness there, then you look at a guy in October who's going to be fresh, who's going to be built up, and who the Cardinals think can be a contributor. So it's just a matter of getting him there. They do think there's enough time, but there are going to be some limitations along the way for the next few weeks.
Yeah, I think we can say no matter what role it would be in, the Pittsburgh Pirates would be one team that would not be too excited to see Michael Walker go out on the mound in a big game against them. Jen, thank you very much. And as always, joined by Adam McKelvey, Brewers beat writer for MLB.com, talking about a team that has finally slid out of that first place hold it had been in since April 6th, kind of still back and forth with the St. Louis Cardinals trying to stop a losing streak as we talk and the momentum going negatively. But they made a major move before the August 31st deadline for postseason rosters, picking up Jonathan Broxton from the Cincinnati Reds. And Adam, that seemed to be a move that people didn't see coming, a little bit of a surprise. Doug Melvin had said only a couple days before that it looked like no activity. So where'd that come from?
Well, it came from him just trying to unturn every stone that there was in terms of finding a late-inning, proven right-handed reliever. He'd gone over the last 2 months for everyone from Koji Uehara to Joaquin Benoit to the guys in Arizona, Reed and Ziegler, and Chad Qualls in Houston. I mean, you name a veteran right-handed reliever with closing experience, and Doug Melvin had tried to trade for him. They were able to make a deal in the division, and yeah, that is a little surprising. You don't see that very often, especially considering the fact that Broxton is signed through next season, so he'll pitch a lot against the Reds over the next calendar year plus. And for the Brewers, it's also surprising because they haven't spent big money on a bullpen arm for a long time. The last guy that even approaches this salary that comes to my mind is Eric Gagne, who signed for $10 million to be their closer in 08. That didn't work out. And ever since then, the Doug Melvin had been able to cobble together a pen with pretty, reasonably priced players. K-Rod certainly is an example of an exception. But his closers have all been, young guys. So this did come as a surprise yesterday. It was certainly needed for the Brewers. It does not, unfortunately, help them with their number one problem as we speak, which is the fact they all of a sudden can't hit.
Yeah, you referenced real quick the salary, and with Broxton due $9 million next year, almost triple what they're paying K-Rod this year to be the closer, and I think as of now it would be the fourth biggest salary on the books next year. Does that say anything about Francisco Rodriguez's future with the Brewers? Do you think they can have both of those guys long term?
Well, I don't know. Rodriguez is, of course, a free agent again this winter. His agent is Scott Boras, who has a couple of times before been able to get his guys coming off big years some multi-year large contracts. And I don't know that the Brewers are willing to go there. So I think the likelihood is, or at least the possibility is certainly there that Francisco Rodriguez is closing games for somebody else next season. So this did give the Brewers coverage for this year should, as Doug Melvin said, if our next 30 games are one-run victories, we're covered now. So that's a nice optimistic way of looking at it. And also then it does give them an option for next year. Will they pay for both? I don't know. That's a little hard for me to see because of what a dramatic departure it would be from the way they've done both ends here for the last couple of years, which is, not really direct a lot of resources toward that and save your resources mostly for starting pitching, where they, I think, surprised some people with the amount they've spent for the likes of Garza, Gallardo on a long-term deal. Kyle Loesch deal surprised people when he went for a $10 million plus per year average. So they've got a lot of money directed now to other players, and they've signed some of their own players long-term, Ryan Braun, Gomez, Luke Roy, and those salaries go up. So it's, you know, I think bullpen's going to be tight. They're probably much more likely to have Broxton back and fill in around him with, again, the pre-arbitration guy.
Sticking with the pitching side of things, Matt Garza due to come off the disabled list and start at Wrigley Field in that series before the Brewers face the Cardinals over the weekend in a really big series. And as of this point in time, do you see the Brewers sticking with a six-man rotation, or do you think, assuming Garza can, at least go 5-6 innings deep when he comes back, will they think about moving Jimmy Nelson to the bullpen or doing something else to go to a five-man rotation?
Well, yeah. I think they'll go back to five in a relatively short order. At this time of year, the importance of these games, I don't think it's the time to monkey around with that. The reason that six makes sense for one turn is it gives these guys a little bit of extra rest in a long, a reasonably long stretch of games right now. It also, as we speak, they haven't said exactly how they're going to do this, but going with six would push Yovani Gallardo out of that Cardinals series. And while it sounds crazy to move your opening day pitcher out of any series, usually he's a guy you want pitching in a big one, Yovani Gallardo is 1-11 lifetime against the St. Louis Cardinals. He just cannot beat them. And we're not talking about a handful of games. We're talking about a nice enough sample that this is a team that gives him a lot of trouble. So by giving Jimmy Nelson one more start, they could push Gallardo to that next series. It would be at home against the Marlins. Again, as we speak, I don't know exactly how they're going to handle that, but that's the thinking there. After that, they get back to their main guys. And the good news for the Brewers is they try to hang on here and make the playoffs is again, as we speak, they're at full strength again. With Garza back, Kyle Loesch back from missing a start with an ankle injury. They're waiting word right now on Carlos Gomez, who has a wrist injury. But they've basically got their team in place. And I guess that's the thing that they're going to have to hang their hat on now is they got the guys. Now it's up to those players to perform.
The guy that seems like he has been the most consistent in the lineup lately, Aramis Ramirez, they might like him to hit for a little bit more power than he's been, but that 380 average he had in the month of August, I mean, just how big has that been as the rest of the lineup kind of has been sputtering?
Yeah, real big. I mean, he's an important guy. And we're talking about a cleanup hitter, so I think with any team you'd have the same conversation. But with Ryan Braun being not, Ryan Braun, with Carlos Gomez being either really great and dynamic or slumping big time, just the nature of his inconsistency, and with Jonathan Lucroy, who I think is a legit MVP candidate in the league, kind of going through his first prolonged little slump of the year, Ramirez has been really big for keeping that offense going to the extent it has been going. He's just, and you're right, Phil, he doesn't hit homers like he once did, but he's the guy, I think you can find one on each team where if you have a runner on third less than two outs, who do you want at the plate? I think it would be pretty universal that Aramis Ramirez would be that guy for the Milwaukee Brewers. He's one of their most professional of hitters. He doesn't strike out. And he still can play here at third base. I don't know laterally if he is what he was. But coming in on balls, I mean, he is so good at making that play on the little dribbler toward third base still with all the physical issues he's had. So he's still been a solid player. And as we, you talk about looking ahead next year, that's really going to be a real interesting one for the Brewers. He has an option. It's expensive. As I said, they have a lot of money going to other players now. They still have a need at first base. A third base is going to be really interesting for this Brewers team over the winter to see if they pay big to bring Ramirez back.
And a guy we know is in their plans going forward, Gene Segura, the shortstop. You had an interesting piece, I thought, earlier in the week, late last week on Gene Segura. And some of the difficulties he's had this year, certainly off the field, lost a child mid-season, went home to the Dominican Republic, came right back, jumped into the lineup, and just all. But even before that, an offensive struggle for him. And the one thing I found interesting, Adam, some thought that he might be too balanced in his swing and his stance at the approach. I didn't know you could be that too balanced.
Well, basically, it's flat-footedness. He's a guy who stands up there and swings a lot with his upper body, with his hands, and he doesn't do that back load. He doesn't load like most players do. And he's been watching video of other guys recently to see how they do it. You know, Ramirez is one. He'll kind of turn that front foot and load back. Miguel Cabrera does a real quick little back load and then steps into the ball. A lot of guys will do the toe tap or lift their front leg as a timing slash weight shift mechanism. Segura is very flat-footed, and it's worked for him throughout his career. You know, he's a guy growing up in the Dominican Republic. No one taught him how to hit. He just picked up a stick and started hitting. And it took him all the way to the major leagues and some success in the first half of last season. Now he's having much less success. These are the best pitchers in the world, obviously. They know a lot more about him. They know how to get him out, and they've been getting him out now for a year and a half. And the question is, will the Brewers send him home with a pretty big change to his mechanics? It might not look big, but it feels big to the player, I'll tell you. And it's under discussion, and it's something that they think would make him a better big league hitter. He still plays the good defense. And, you know, it was interesting talking to Segura about it. He says, yeah, that, you know, he's looked. He's open to whatever they think can, you know, make him a better player if that's what it takes. But he also argues that a lot of what's happening is mental. He, you know, the way he said it to me was, I've got a lot of things on my mind. And, you know, you can't blame him with the off-the-field things. Then you couple that with a tough on-the-field season. Lots of people giving him advice on how to get better. It's a lot to handle in the midst of trying to perform every day in three or four at-bats every night. So a lot on his mind. The key for me is this guy is still their shortstop. This isn't the Cubs where they've got six shortstops at AAA who would be the best prospect in everybody's organization. Gene Segura is the Brewers guy. So I think they'll send him home with some things to think about. I think they'll probably want him to take winter ball off, although that's not been determined. And, you know, hope that he can come back next season and be a little more productive. He plays good enough defense that he doesn't have to hit, like, you know, in his prime Derek Jeter. He just needs to hit a little bit more than he has.
Well, that's great, Adam. And I know get out of Chicago, back home, the Brewers in an 11-game homestand that starts with four games against the Cardinals. Adam Wainwright sitting there for the Sunday start. Really going to be a telling time to see if this Brewers team that has been so much fun to watch all season, if they can finish it strong and be playing in October. So we'll have fun to talk about that next week. Going to be joined by Tom Singer, Pirates beat writer, and talking about a Pirates team that bounced back from that 7-game losing streak that in the middle of August took them out of the wild card position. Looks to me like they're really trending the way you would want to be going into September. Quite a few guys swinging the bats well. And, you know, while they position themselves to have to fight it out again like they did last year, I think with McCutchen back on the field, they're in pretty good shape for that fight. Tom, how do you assess kind of their attitude of the team coming into this stretch where they still have to play from behind the Cardinals and Brewers, but very catchable?
Well, you know, it's a team that's hanging in there, but just quite can't get over the hump. They still haven't gotten off to that good, sustained winning streak that would make them really solid postseason contenders. They've won four in a row. I think they're one of two major league teams that has not had a longer winning streak than four. And basically, it's a classic case of taking two steps forward and one step back. They're still trying to generate that long sustained streak that can get them not only in a position to contend, but perhaps be a front runner for the postseason berth. So it's kind of frustrating to watch the process. Andrew McCutchen has gone on record as saying that in this current slightly slide back, they've lost a lot of games they should have won. He's kind of calling on the guys to step up because it's September and it's time to time to go.
Well, speaking of September, time to go, and Andrew McCutchen, last week when we did the podcast, McCutchen had just come off the DL, and we're talking about, you said not 100% and going to watch out for how he handles himself, plays at the wall. And it feels like just after we taped that, boom, he banged off the wall and left the game with a rib, which I think initially scared a lot of people that he could be out a long time, but he's returned to the lineup and feels good. Is there how is he physically? I mean, do you see him playing any differently because of the concern that the ribs really aren't going to fully heal till after the season?
I have. He's a pretty remarkable athlete. Everybody kind of concedes that he's playing at 80%, but Clint Hurdle gives us that classic takeaway that him at 80% is a lot better than a lot of players at 100%. I still do see him pulling up, on the bases, on the base path when it's not worth going all out. In the outfield, he's making the plays, but he's not laying out. I don't think we'll see him hit grass defensively the rest of the season. He does have to be cautious. But then again, it's remarkable. Recently, he muscled up for the second longest home run ever hit at Busch Stadium 3 by a visiting player. 454-foot shot. So, I mean, for a guy who's 80% to hit a ball that far, it kind of tells you a lot about, number one, what kind of player he is, and number two, how smart he is about conserving his energy and letting it go when it, when it really matters. But a couple of things we'll see as a concession to the rib injury, and no infield hits for Kutch, and basically none of those trademark diving catches in the outfield. He's going to have to, he still is the captain of the outfield, but he's going to let Marte in left field and Polanco, who should be coming back any day now, in right field, take the balls in the gap. He's not going to try to be a hero defensively.
Hey, Tom, looking at their production in August, four hitters with an OPS of 919 or more. In addition to McCutchen, you had Josh Harrison, the All-Star. You also had Starling Marte and Russell Martin all really hitting. And yet the team, like you say, hadn't gone on the consecutive run. And really it seems to have to fight out for a lot of 2-1, 3-2 wins up and down the lineup, not really going. Who would you point to who might come in and give them a lift in September that's not in that group of guys already hitting? Could Polanco be that guy coming back, or is there somebody on the roster who you think could step up and really give the lineup a lift?
Well, Neil Walker definitely can do that. The guy that seemed to be ready to do that has been one of the big X factors all season, Pedro Alvarez. He started to play some first base, which reduced the mental pressure on him defensively because of his problems throwing at third base. He's playing first base, hits three home runs in two games, and everybody's thinking, okay, now that 2-week span where Pedro can carry a team is arriving at just the right time. And next thing you know, he sprains his left foot. He hasn't played since, a little power surge. So if physically he can get back in the lineup, Alvarez is definitely a candidate to do that. But otherwise, Neil Walker, who's muscled up for some home runs since the return to the lineup, he was out as well with some back spasms. But he hasn't hit as consistently as he can. But I would say those two guys, one dark horse, Andrew Lambeau came up from the minors. Not as one of the September call-offs. He came up after the last week in August. And Travis Snyder, who was out with a hamstring, slight hamstring injury, Lambeau got a chance to play. And, he's been producing pretty well. So he's another big X factor that should come a big one in September.
Yeah, go back to spring training, how much they thought Lambeau might grab the first base job in, right? And, really be a major part. So I can see why, if you got him going at the right time, that could be a big thing. Charlie Morton, I see he's back on the mound, but not yet back in Pittsburgh. What's the September forecast for Charlie Morton? How could he contribute?
That's an absolute unknown. He had a pretty good rehab outing with Altoona. The numbers were good, but physically, reportedly, he did not feel any better. He got a sports hernia. He continues to be on a workout schedule, throwing bullpens and sim games. But he's not likely at all to return to rotation. A long shot could be that they might use him in relief, which he had never done. But he concedes that the effects of the hernia, he feels they're more pronounced after, going up and down and with the number of pitches as a starting pitcher. So he could perhaps be quite effective, maybe one inning at a time. He's a good sinker baller. It would be a very limited role, but I could see him going in a bullpen. And when, they actually need somebody to come in and throw a double play, he'd be a candidate to do that. Obviously, with the expanded roster, you don't have to make any roster decisions whether to have him active or not. So I don't think we'll see much of Charlie Morton in September, but we might see him pop in a couple of real key situations with that center ball.
Hey, Tom, like pitchers like their double plays turned. I learned that a long time ago. Us writers, we like players who can really fill up the notebook. And I had to laugh reading Tony Sanchez, a young catcher who's been working some at first base, but he described his play there right now is like a dog playing fetch. He's a guy we've got to root for to get in and to be in position to quote on a regular basis, don't you think?
Absolutely. He is a delight to talk to. He's very quotable, has a great personality. The first base thing is real long shot, maybe for the 2015 picture. I mean, they do have four other guys, including Pedro now, who can play first base. So, I mean, it's not like they need Tony to play first base. But right now he's the number three catcher. The September call-ups, I don't foresee it, including another catcher. So, basically, he'll be the third guy behind Morton and Chris Stewart. And he's got a good bat. I think that's essentially what brought him back to the majors. He already got a couple key pitch hits early in the season when he was, when both Stewart and Morton took turns on the DL. Sanchez spent the first 7 weeks with the Pirates and had a lot of big key hits. They like his bat, and the whole thing about first base is just another way to perhaps get his bat into late game situations when you make double switches and all that. Tony Sanchez is a great guy to have. And you know what? He's very popular in the clubhouse. His personality is infectious. Everybody likes him.
Yeah. Tom, just looking at the schedule, and I know the Pirates, they're playing teams that are out of the playoffs, right? Starting this weekend, they come to Chicago, then they got a series against the Phillies, and the Cubs go to Pittsburgh, and then they get the Red Sox in interleague play. I know those are going to be fun to cover. Not as easy as it would look. All those teams actually playing fairly decent lately. So, Tom, thank you very much for being on here. I'll be joined by Mark Sheldon, our Reds beat writer, talking about a team that I have to wonder if they've waved the white flag. They traded Jonathan Broxton. I could understand why they would want to move a contract from a guy that signed also for next year if you already have Aroldis Chapman as your closer. But, Mark, how was that trade taken? Should we look at that and say the Reds no longer really think they can be a factor in the wild card race?
That's kind of how I took it. At the same time, talking to Walt Jocketty after the deal was done, he insists that this is not a white flag move, that it was an opportunity to move a contract and think about next year, but at the same time, they feel like with the guys they have that can pick up the slack in the bullpen and on playing almost entirely in division schedule the last month, that they still can be in this thing. But, you know, Broxton and Chapman were really the best two arms the bullpen has, and you've now eliminated one of them, and you've gone to a division rival on top of it. So it's tough to look at that and not say that it's a move where they're kind of looking ahead to 2015 rather than 2014.
Well, when they do take Broxton off of their 2015 salary commitment, it frees up $10 million, including his option for 16. What's your early thoughts on where they might be able to spend that money as they move forward? What can they use to replace a $10 million setup guy with?
Well, unfortunately, the economics for the Reds says they don't get to do a whole lot with it. They'll be able to pay the salary of somebody like Sean Marshall, who's owed $6.5 million for next year. He gets a big increase. They'll be able to do the buyout for Ryan Ludwig, who's got a $4.5 million buyout on his option. So right there, you've already taken care of $11 million. And then, but then you have the increases in the arbitration guy's salaries. Like you have 4/5 of the rotation that's going to be a free agent in 2016, and 3 of them in Leak, Latos, and Simon are all third year arbitration eligible. So the money will dry up fast of that salary, but it was necessary to do to move that contract. It was going to be weighing them down heading into next season, and they are a team with limited options as far as trying to get extra guys from the outside. So this is a good move for them, I think, in the big picture for next year.
Yeah, and I'm sure nothing they would like better next year than for Jay Bruce to be the player that he had been. Previously, he's still got 2 years left on a six-year, $51 million contract. And as we speak, just to throw out some numbers, his .217 batting average is 67th among 69 National League batting title qualifiers. And his WAR dropped from 5.1 last year to a negative 0.9. What's going on with Jay Bruce this year?
Yeah, I had a nice chat with him the other day about that. And He really just says it's been a miserable year, and he's been the most what he said was the most embarrassing year of his career. A lot of it, even though he wasn't admitting it for the longest time, is that, and Brian Price, the manager, kind of also put this out there, was that he really hasn't been 100% since he came back from the knee surgery. He missed 2 weeks, had an arthroscopic surgery repair of the meniscus, and he came right back pretty much. He didn't have a long rehab. He didn't have a rehab assignment of any kind. He just didn't have any rest. And I think he's been trying to figure out how to keep his swing consistent while he doesn't have all the strength in the back of his leg and his backside of his stance. So it's, in that sense, it's been tough, but he's also saying if he's on the field, he's accountable. So he is holding himself accountable for all the mistakes that have happened. He's been trying to do a lot of different adjustments with his approach. And, you know, one time he tried lowering his hands about 6 to 8 inches than he normally did, and he struck out 5 times. He called that the lowest point of pretty much of his career. It was a rough day. So he's going to try to use these last 24 or so games to try to make the most of it and try to come up with something that'll make him better for next year.
How about in the field? I've marveled watching series Reds versus Cubs and just how much respect the Cubs have had through the years with his arm, and I mean, just single to right, almost no thought that they're going to go first to third, and he seems to be held in really high regard. Has his fielding been okay this year?
His arm has still been good, and he's had a few assists. I've definitely noticed a few fielding mistakes where, you know, he's had a couple of balls drop in on him, or he had one go off his glove, and you know, just one day there was a triple where I kind of thought maybe he should have let it play off the wall instead. He got too close and it went past him. Those are things that you don't normally see Jay do. But I think overall, though, he's still a strong defensive player. I think it's odd his range as far as some of the sabermetrics. His numbers have actually gone down that way because now that Billy Hamilton's in center field, he doesn't have to cover quite as much ground as he used to and do as many things. When Shin-Soo Chu, a below-average center fielder, was there last season, Jay had to cover a lot more ground, and he did a really good job with it. But oddly enough, his numbers are going down this year because of Hamilton is just so good and covers so much space.
Yeah, that's a great point. The parts all have to work together. And looking at a guy who's just from start to finish been everything you'd want a player to be this year, Johnny Cueto, as we talk, he's leading the league in innings pitched, tied for the league lead in wins, second to Steven Strasburg in strikeouts, and seems to be almost an afterthought in a Cy Young race that Clayton Kershaw seems, in terms of public opinion, it seems like it's all about Clayton Kershaw, who does have the lower ERA but missed the time on the disabled list at the start of the season. Do you think can Cueto make a case for himself in September? Does he just have to kind of wait to see, you know, is it on Clayton Kershaw, that one good month from Kershaw and he puts it away?
Yeah, I mean, Kershaw's having a pretty special season, and I'm sure some people make the case that Kershaw could even be the MVP as well as a Cy Young winner. So I think Johnny will have his work cut out for him to unseat the favorite. But at the same time, he's had a great year. He's definitely elevated himself after a year last year where he was, you know, mostly injured and missed a lot of time. And I think it's showed that he's still one of the top flight pitchers in baseball, and he's getting better and better every year too. He just seems to just keep finding ways to improve and be a competitor. He's got so many. I think he's got 12 games this year where he's reached eight innings with two earned runs or less, and it's pretty remarkable for the year he's had. And I think it's just going to be tough for him to get those awards because the Reds are essentially out of contention. The Dodgers are very much in it, so it's going to be interesting to see what he does with these last four or five starts.
What about Billy Hamilton in terms of those awards? We've seen him kind of bounce back up and down since the All-Star break, but as we speak now, he's on a little hitting streak, and he's been stealing bases, five in his last five games, got that projects to 64 stolen bases. Watching him finish out the season in September, a strong September seems like could put him solidly in that rookie of the year position. It is what do you expect from him coming down for the last month? First time he's played the long, extended season.
Yeah, it is. I just talked to him about it, and he says he feels really fresh. He doesn't feel like he's wearing down. He does a lot to condition and take care of his body. Spends a lot of time in the hot tub to get himself loose. His numbers have dipped, especially in July after his big rookie of the month year in June, and he's kind of came back in August a little bit, like you said. So it'll be curious to see if he can to really essentially pad his numbers to get, you know, to get rookie of the year consideration. He's pretty much up there in every category. DeGrom in the I think I've said his name right, in New York could be a candidate to maybe get some rookie of the year votes. But I think Hamilton is just what he's done. He's been a great defensive center fielder. He's done a really nice job covering the ground, like I said before. And he's, you know, while his on-base percentage is only .302, and that's something that he really needs to work on for next year, I think he's done a pretty good job, you know, overall at hitting and setting the tone and creating some trouble for the opposing pitchers and defense on the base.
Yeah, no question. It seems like the Reds have been at their best this year when he's been in the middle of it. Mark, thank you very much. I'm going to be joined by Kerry Muscat, MLB.com beat writer on the Chicago Cubs, and talking about a team that's younger and younger, but the guys that were stealing the show in the first game of the current homestand, really young. Talking about that Jackie Robinson West Little League team that won the U.S. final and has really kind of stolen the hearts of Chicago in the last couple weeks. And, Kerry, it must have been really cool to see those guys. I really like seeing the Cubs players put on the Jackie Robinson West jerseys. And, you know, anything jump out? Was there any one player who seemed to most enjoy the interaction with them, or what struck you from having the Little Leaguers around?
I'm not sure if there was one player. I think all the players were pretty much in awe of the kids. What was fun was to see. I still don't think that these kids understand what an impact they had. And catcher John Baker had taken video of the Cubs players watching their game and how excited they were because they were watching during a rain delay that the team had. And so the kids are watching these big leaguers getting all excited watching them. And I don't think they understood, it hasn't hit them what kind of an impact they made and that people were really following them. I mean, they're just playing a game. The kids got to go into the so then Baker took the kids into the clubhouse and pretty much just opened the cabinet doors in the lounge and said, take whatever you want. So they took some sunflower seeds and gum and things like that, and then went through the clubhouse, and players were giving them bats and batting gloves, and I guess one kid got a pair of shoes, and somebody else might have gotten a glove. I mean, it was, as the coach said, it was like Christmas for these kids because the big league players were more than happy to see them. And it was just fun to hear the kids, you know, they wanted to see Jorge Soler because they're saying, wow, that dude's hit 3 home runs in 5 games. And they're like, they couldn't believe how big they were. And the nice thing is players like Wesley Wright and Edwin Jackson were part of the major league group that contributed financially to help the families go to Williamsport to watch these kids. And Edwin and Wesley have really tried to be behind the scenes. They don't want any publicity on this, but I think they deserve a major round of applause for just stepping up and trying to help these kids. Wesley was saying that he didn't get to a big league ballpark until he was in instructional league, which is after he was drafted. So here these kids are being, you know, wheeled around here, and they did the very cool parade around the warning track, and then they got to go sing the seventh inning stretch. With it was fun because I think it looked like they knew all the words, which is always impressive. But it was quite the day, yes, when they were there on the field.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I see Jorge Soler, I pretty much have that same reaction. I can't believe how big he is. I can't believe how strong he is. And his Wrigley Field debut, jump in a pair of doubles, and watching them run the bases, I mean, this was, to me, looks like your prototypical five-tool guy. I mean, I'm not sure there's what you would point at for his weakness. But, you know, everybody's been looking at him. He came to Chicago in this incredible role in AAA and has just continued it. Watching him, just what has stuck out to you, Gary, watching Soler? Is this plate discipline? He doesn't seem to give up at bats.
Yeah, his approach at the plate is really mature for somebody who's only 22 and really did not play much before the Cubs signed him in 2012. The people that deserve a lot of credit for this guy are the Cubs athletic staff, and they'll probably get no credit, but they should, because when he was having problems with his legs, he had broke a bone in his leg last year, and then was having hamstring issues this year. They did this entire workup on him and took this really in-depth approach to his health and discovered, and this is going to sound, and mothers and fathers should pay attention, but apparently he was drinking a ton of soda because they didn't have soda in Cuba, not as readily available as it is here. So that was contributing to some of his leg injuries. Wasn't eating any vegetables, and they put him on, they took this whole approach, you know, checked him out head to toe and changed his diet, changed his posture, changed the way he runs, and now he's healthy. And I think that's the biggest plus, is that he has the skills and the baseball skills, but you combine that with somebody who is healthy, and I think we've seen that with any major league player, whatever they can do could be really special. I know Luis Valbuena, after Soler made his debut, Luis Valbuena was pretty excited. He was saying, pretty much, just give him more games, and then you'll see what happens. And just that he's an amazing player. Even the other players are pretty impressed.
One of Jorge Soler's teammates until recently at AAA Iowa, Chris Bryant, the Iowa season ends. Bryant holds on for the home run crown over Joey Gallo, a prospect with Texas, 43 home runs this year, one more than Gallo. And just a terrific season for Bryant in every way you'd want. And he won't come to Wrigley in September. They won't use a roster spot on him now, which to me makes perfect sense because they're going to have really difficult decisions to make on that 40-man roster.
Kerry, what do you see? What will Bryant do over the next, with his time between now and spring training, when he will be the biggest story in Mesa next spring, I guess?
Yeah. Well, hopefully he gets a little rest. Actually, I wouldn't be surprised if he is in September, and I don't want fans to take that the wrong way, but he may just be the Cubs minor league player of the year, considering that the numbers that he put up, and they may bring him up to the ballpark just to kind of do a little news conference. So he won't be in uniform. He might just be there like they did last year with Baez and they did with Kyle Hendricks. But that's not official, but that would just be an easy guess. I'm guessing Bryant takes it easy and then gets back to work. He's got the batting cage at home with his dad in Vegas, and the funny thing is he and Gallo are very close friends, so I'm guessing the two of them would also get together this offseason and start getting ready for 2015.
And moving on to a guy that got to Wrigley before Soler and Javi Baez created the first little pop in this. Maybe Arismendi Alcantara actually contributed the first pop in this waterfall of excitement over the Cubs prospects. But you look at Javi Baez's numbers now, and as we talk, he's got 116 big league at-bats. Yes, he has the 7 home runs, but he's hitting 181 and 50 strikeouts, almost every other at-bat striking out, very few walks. Is it a given that he's the second baseman next year, or will he have to go and have a solid spring to win a job on the big league roster next year? What's your take on that? I know it's not very defined at this point, but Kerry, what's your take on that?
I think they everywhere that Javi's gone, he's always struggled in the first maybe month or so, and I think what they're hoping is that he gets the struggle out of the way this year and that he realizes what he needs to do to get better. And he'll work on his approach. The best at bat he had, and he even admitted this, was when he hit a double in St. Louis and he worked the count. And it was just so impressive to see him be patient at the plate and to see what happens. And he even called it his greatest at bat of the year. And which was kind of funny because it's only August, but he knows what he has to do. He's a smart enough kid, and he knows what he has to do. It's just this is a good way for him to figure it out.
Well, my favorite at bat for him, and I think it just goes to show what a smart, instinctive player he is, which I think bodes very well, was a strikeout when he popped up. He went down on one knee, as he often does, swinging and missing at the ball. But they popped right up and ran to first, kept a rally going, and they wound up getting a hit to win that game earlier in August. One last thing, Kerry. We look at, talking about the Cubs now. They're going to turn their attention, the front office, to pitching, try to bring in some pitching. But I see a lot of possibilities. Jacob Turner, who just beat the Brewers and went into a seventh inning in that start, Also, Felix Dubront, who went 7 innings at Busch Stadium in his Cubs debut, that's pretty impressive. And Dan Straley didn't get it going at Iowa after the Cubs picked him up in a trade, but he's pitched very well at times. Is there any way to order these guys? Are they all? It seems to me like the front office is open-minded about all of those guys, but is it any of those guys kind of have a leg up going into the end of the season and the off season?
Well, I think what they talked about and what they want to do is that for the final months they want to use a 6-man rotation, which sounds a little awkward, but they're hoping that it works because they want Dubront and they want Turner to get some more starts, and also it eases up a little bit of the work, gives Arrieta, Travis Wood, and Hendricks a little more rest. Also, Wada, and they'll it's a great audition. It's a great chance. Turner was really pleased after his start against the Brewers. Dubront was really pumped after his outing against the Cardinals. And those are both teams that are, competing for the Central Division. So these are not easy wins. It's just, it's a good chance, again, you know, you can't beat the experience. As a lot of these, after the game, the Cubs game in St. Louis, the series finale on last Sunday, they were talking about how these guys just can't match this. You can't. You can take as much BP and you can throw as much many side sessions as you want, but when these guys get into a playoff-type game, which the Cardinals are facing now for the final month to hold on to the division, you know, this is great for them. So we'll see what they do.
Well, thanks a lot, Kerry. This has been Phil Rogers. Thanks for listening to MLB.com Extras, NL Central Edition.